We're going to start.
End of process. This is,
as you know, we have a number of bills that we would like to hear today, and I know that you would appreciate not coming in the evening, so we are going to do the best we can to go through the agenda. And we have Senator Johnson is first in the list. I'm hoping that as we move forward, we will have quorum, senators. So why don't we go ahead and start the presentations, and you can call your testifiers. And I think that will be helpful. So let's begin.
Madam Chair and members, I'm really pleased to be able to come before you and talk to you about our bill, Senate File 812, regarding vision therapy. I call it my convergence insufficiency bill. And that was very difficult for me to get out of my mouth, because really I did not understand it at all before I started taking on this bill. So I want to read you what I copied off of the Mayo Clinic site on the internet, and it says, convergence insufficiency occurs when your eyes don't turn inward properly while you're focusing on a nearby object. When you read or look at a close object, your eyes should converge, which means turning inward together to focus, so that they provide binocular vision and you see a single image. But if you have convergence insufficiency, you won't be able to move your eyes inward to focus normally. Convergence insufficiency is usually diagnosed in school-aged children and adolescents. It can cause difficulty with reading, which may make parents or teachers suspect that the child has a learning disability instead of an eye disorder. Treatments are usually effective for convergence insufficiency. And that's what the Mayo Clinic site said. And members, I think that describes partially why I have this bill here before you. The second reason is because of Dana Flanders Thurman from the Centennial School District, who approached me about it this year, but also give credit to Representative Barrett in the House and Senator Nenow here in the Senate, who had this bill introduced last year. Representative Jerry Newton is carrying this bill in the House this year. So basically, that's my presentation. And then I would like to ask Dana Flanders Thurman and my other testifier, A.B. Schultz, who is the daughter of our E-12 Finance Committee's Committee Administrator, Dana Elling. She wants to tell you about her experience. First, we'll start with Dana Flanders, Dana and Dana.
Thank you, Senator. I have in my agenda Thurman. I don't know if Thurman is
Thurman.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum. So please, Ms. Thurman, please go ahead and start your testimony. Introduce yourself first.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dana Flanders Thurman. I am a special education teacher at Centennial School District. I have been teaching in the public schools for over 20 years, about 23 years now, and my concerns started many years ago when I saw students in my special ed classes who were not progressing in their academic skills. They would oftentimes cover one eye when they read. They would move their head across the page, and they wouldn't remember what they read. And so I looked into this, and I found some literature that did talk about vision therapy and learning-related vision problems, but there wasn't really much out there as far as I could see as far as talking to people rather than just looking at literature. Fast forward to 9 years ago, my son, Austin Terman, was a second grader and was displaying the same behaviors that my special ed students were. And so he would cover one eye, couldn't remember what he read, and did not find reading very pleasurable. The red light went on. I knew where to go and look for help and got him some help, got him evaluated, and he was a candidate for vision therapy. And he is now a ninth grader and taking honors classes and doing very well in class, in school, and enjoying learning. I continue to see this issue with my students. I'm a special education teacher at the high school level, and I have 9th through 12th graders, and I oftentimes see these students do the same things, you know, cover their eyes, move their head instead of their eyes across the paper. Oftentimes these students are also, you know, I teach the second half of the day, and oftentimes these students, I know one student, he does not, sometimes I've even come to my class because he talks about his headaches. He gets headaches so badly, he isn't even there to receive instruction in my sixth period class. Because the next day he'll tell me, oh, yeah, I had a really bad headache and I couldn't see, and yada, yada, yada. So this is a concern of mine. I brought it up to Representative Baird a few years ago, and we started working that way. And so I met Senator Johnson a few months ago and brought it up to her concern, and she was willing to keep working on it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Schultz?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Senators, hi. I'm Abby Schultz. I'm a senior at Hastings High School. I was diagnosed with this going into middle school, about sixth grade. My regular eye doctor had said, hey, you know, I think your daughter has a problem. You should go see this doctor in Hudson. Well, my family, we didn't really think it was a problem because we didn't see a struggle in my schoolwork at that time. But then sophomore year, I had enrolled in honors classes at the high school, and my mom and myself started to see a problem. I was assigned chapter books for English class, and I could only read them for about 5 minutes before I would fall asleep in my bed because I would get so fatigued from reading and I would get a headache, so I would just stop reading. And then for our World Studies class, we had this book that just the hardest book to read, and I couldn't comprehend anything that I was reading. And so eventually my mom said, you need to go see a vision therapy doctor. And I went, and they tested me, and I was eligible for their vision therapy with convergence insufficiency. So I would attend a vision therapy class Saturday mornings, where they would do different things to get to strengthen both my eyes. My left eye is, I think it's weaker than my right eye. So they would have me cover my eye, and I would do different exercises so I can strengthen them. So when I do read, my eyes aren't focusing on converging so I can see the words, but my brain can read what's actually on the page. I sophomore year, I felt like I was stupid because I didn't understand why I couldn't read what was on the page, because my sister and my mom are both excellent readers. And when I was always reading chapter or fiction books in elementary school. I was one of the first kids to be done reading a full page book, but once the schoolwork got harder, it got harder for me to understand what was going on. So I felt stupid, and my mom said, you're not stupid. You just have a problem, and you need to fix it. So now I'm on the A honor roll at school, and I'm reading so much better. I just got done with college psychology public speaking class, and I got an A. And now I am in college psychology, and the textbook is really big, and it's hard to read. So what my mom and I did is we bought a book on Amazon, and I am highlighting in the book instead of reading and taking notes because my eyes still have a hard time functioning, taking notes and reading it and then writing it down because there's still the convergency problem. And even in class, when looking up at the whiteboard or the smart board and then taking the notes, there's the struggle. And it's still a struggle sometimes to do that because my eyes aren't always there, but they're 1,000 times better. So I highlight in my book, and that works a lot better, and I'm understanding what I'm reading. And I really encourage that this therapy should be done because it's great. And I was never in special education. I was never put in special education class because no one really saw like the struggle during school because it wasn't. It's one of those things where you sometimes can't diagnose it as special education, but it at home when I was trying to do my homework, it just felt like I couldn't do it.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Do you think that if you would have been diagnosed earlier, your problem would have been corrected much more effectively, or does it make a difference if you're diagnosed really early? Because it seems like it's a difficult diagnosis. So I wonder if it makes a difference if we, discover that early.
I think if it was diagnosed earlier or if I went to therapy earlier, I wouldn't have had the struggle sophomore year in high school when your grades really matter. And I think maybe even I would have a harder time understanding math. I am just not good at math. And I think if my eyes could understand what was going on, I'm reading 1,000 times better now. I'm not tired, but I think I could have excelled better in my schoolwork if I was diagnosed earlier. Yes.
If you ask me, you're doing very well. Going to Oxford is not an easy task. So.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just help me. What does vision therapy entail? Is it just vision correction, or are there other things that you do to help?
Ms. Schultz.
I can tell you exactly what I did. The first thing I did was they sat me down onto a computer, and they used blue and red coloring, so I had to put on glasses, and it was like a video game. There would be a box with like the letter D in it, and my eyes had to try to focus to get the D to line up, and then I would click a button to say, "Yep, it's lined up." And so the strength of how my eyes had to converge would differ. So I had to pass different levels. So it was like a video game. And at first they had me sitting on a ball because apparently when you sit on a ball and you sit up straight, I don't know, it something with the convergency makes it stronger. And and sometimes it would black out one eye. So then just one eye had to focus and get the two D's to line up on the page.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, we have Dr. Jonathan Schoen here, who is an optometrist. That could maybe, if you would like, to have him answer that question also in a, I don't know if it's more descript, but probably a little more medically.
Senator, we can go into this, in detail, but we don't have a lot of time. So if you could be brief, we'd appreciate
it. Be very brief, yes. So, Madam Chair, committee members.
If you could introduce yourself.
Yes, I'm Dr. Jonathan Schoen. I practice in Lakeville, Minnesota. I'm an optometrist. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Optometric Association. Optometrists have been performing vision therapy for years with great success. I want to just briefly first applaud Senator Johnson and Representative Newton for bringing this forth. I want to thank them for recognizing the link between visual processing and learning and the need for comprehensive eye exams and vision therapy for certain students struggling to succeed in school. We understand and agree there is a great need to provide more help to children with vision-related learning issues, and vision therapy has been proven in many, many studies to help many children suffering with these myriad problems. I'm here today, unfortunately, though, to say that, I think we still have to work on this bill just a little bit. There are several concerns that we have as an association with this legislation as it currently stands. In our view, there are a number of questions which still need to be answered regarding the solutions to helping this group of kids before this venture can realistically proceed. We feel there needs to be more clarification on who performs the comprehensive eye exams, who makes the diagnosis of the vision-related learning deficit, and then who ultimately prescribes the individual plan. Each student is going to have different issues. Convergence insufficiency is one of the primary challenges, but there are many others, and each student is going to have an individual plan. Again, we have some concerns with who trains the individuals doing the therapy, what qualifications these individuals have, and also where is the therapy going to be performed. So ultimately, we believe this process realistically belongs more in the medical community, where it is already well established. As Ms. Schultz indicated, she went to an optometrist who helped perform this and help her succeed. Rather than putting this into the educational system, both from a practical and a financial standpoint, we believe that's sort of where it belongs. The challenge, we believe, is that the insurance companies are not properly reimbursing occupational therapists, optometrists, for doing this. And rather than burdening the state and the education system, that's where we believe it would better be suited. So as an association, we certainly offer our help, and we want to be a resource to the center here in working with her to help explain some of the challenges associated with this effort being implemented as it's currently laid out. I'd be happy to answer questions if you have anything specific about vision therapy. But
Madam Chair, if I could just say something before we take some more questions. It's kind of related to both of the testifiers, and that really the reason that I think the most important first step for us is to be willing to try to find out who and if people are suffering from this or similar vision problems, and that instead of paying for it with special education, that we could pay for it maybe with some treatment that would really, in the long run, lower our costs, which we've been doing so much of that already. We're trying to do that all the time. That's where the real push on this bill is getting people to recognize that they have the problem and not even spending a lot of time about who pays for it. Some families, many families that I know, have the means and the willingness to do it. So all, but they didn't know.
Thank you, Senator.
Ms. Thurman said today that there was a young man who saw three
images
when he read, but he didn't know that everybody, or when he was studying, he didn't know that everybody didn't see three images. It's crazy, but I remember as a child, I'm nearsighted. I could see close by, but it was amazing when I got my glasses that I saw that trees had leaves that had shapes on them. And so it is very understandable for someone who has experienced a small kind of optical problems.
Senator, is there a reason that you singled out this particular issue? Because I know that we have had hearings before in general about having screenings for children, and the only one we do apparently is the early childhood vision screening, and we don't have any more. So I know this issue has been brought to our attention in the past. Is there a statistical information that you received that this particular issue is more prevalent, or why are you singling out that in this legislation?
And Madam Chair, that's a very appropriate question to ask me, and it is truly what I said before, because Ms. Thurman and Senator Nienau, at the request of Ms. Thurman, brought legislation forward last year. We're interested in working on it, but didn't get it passed. But when Ms. Thurman came to me and brought attention to this, that's what we decided to do. You'll note that the bill doesn't address just I always have to look at that word, convergence insufficiency, but any visual problems that can cause people, which the doctor has said and others of us know, that there are many different kinds of vision problems that cause trouble for children who are trying to learn and be good students and not end up in special ed when we find out it's really an eye problem.
Thank you. Senator Clausen.
Yes, a question and then a comment. School districts right now conduct vision screenings, and I'm wondering if through the vision screening this can be picked up. And then a comment, I look at this, and if this is good for, you know, a portion of the state through a grant system, shouldn't we be doing it for all students? But my concern would be that this seems to be more of a medical issue, and we're placing the burden on a school district now to take care of this. It's an unfunded mandate, and I'm not sure it really belongs there because it is a medical condition. And I don't believe that that it really is covered by special education needs. I think the issue with special education needs and vision would be much more serious than perhaps this. So those are a comment and a question perhaps you can answer.
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Claussen. I understand sort of where you're coming from. My belief too is that the medical community is well adapted. We've already got a system in place to do this. Again, this is a pilot program that is trying to determine our students who are suffering from or who are within an IEP program, do they have some visual component that's causing them to have a deficit and an inability to learn? And we believe that that's true. Vision therapy certainly has been proven to help people with these deficits. So I can see how it could be tied in under the special ed, but again, my belief would be, as you were stating, that it would be better suited in the medical community. Again, to the chair's question about the why convergence insufficiency, I wanted to just make a comment on that. That is one of the most highly successfully treated conditions with vision therapy, and is one of the more highly one of the more high problems that students will have, which inhibits their learning. And that's, I think, why the senator here is highlighting that particular issue. But there are multiple issues, as I said earlier, which is the challenge that we have with the bill right now, is who is going to help facilitate all the different students. And to your point also, not only are students with an IEP maybe struggling with vision processing, but there may be others outside that. Sorry, I'm rambling on here, but to your point about the screening, the vision screenings that are done in school are simply a distance vision reading a chart, and that's really not really telling us anything about the visual processing and how the eye and the brain are putting the information together. Ms. Schultz was very eloquent in explaining how her eyes just couldn't sort of see that. It wasn't that they couldn't see. They couldn't gather the information that they were getting and put that into something that's usable.
And Senator Claussen, also Senator Johnson is asking for an appropriation, so these will go to the Finance Committee, and the intent here is not to move it forward without that, so that the schools, this is a pilot project, and then the schools will be able to access that funding. Is that correct, Senator Johnson?
It is correct, Madam Chair, and I just want to go back to the concern about financial and who pays for it and where it comes from. I appreciate very much how often schools are handling tasks that really aren't education. But the fact is, that's where the children are. And that's where, if we can find out that they have this problem, and who knows, now I'm told there's a possibility that with our new health care coverage, there may be coverage for some of these kinds of things in that bill, which would be very helpful for people who do not have the resources of their own to do it. But there are still many people, and Abby is an example, and I would guess Dana's son was able to get the care after it was diagnosed. But before that, he struggled and she struggled. Those are two people. I'm thinking right now of my own little granddaughter, who she's having some problems in school. And I told my daughter, have you had a comprehensive eye exam? I want you to check her out. And they will check her out with that, because it's a very small thing to do for your child if you have the means to do it and can keep them from feeling stupid, as you said. And that's very common for kids who can't do anything. They feel like they're really stupid, and without having any self-esteem, you're likely to be a failure.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, one more question. Senator Nina.
Just a comment and clarification, Madam Chair. And Senator Claussen's concerns about it, funding and mandates and such. I certainly share those same concerns, but this bill doesn't really fall into that category. It's a pilot project. It's optional for whatever districts might want to participate in it. It is funded. And the idea was, when the bill proponents came to Representative Barrett and myself, we introduced this last year, is that we have children, and you heard the testimony, that might be on a path of getting into special ed, which is very expensive. And if we can change that path for them, in the end, we might actually save money by spending a little bit of money doing this and put them into probably a little better educational situation for them personally as well. If this pilot project showed that to be true, it becomes a win-win for everybody. If this pilot project showed that to not be true, then we have a policy decision as to whether we spend this money because it's a good idea statewide or whether it's not worth that expense. But it will be optional. It's a pilot project, and it will be funded for whatever districts, if this became law, whatever districts would like to opt in.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Johnson, are you ready to make your motion?
I would move that Senate file, and I forgot the number here, 812, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Education Finance, E12 Finance Division.
Thank you. On that motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next in the agenda, we have, I keep moving my papers and I don't know who's next. Senator Franzen. Senator, let us know who your testifiers are so that you can call them to the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any testifiers at this point.
Okay.
Okay, it will only be me.
Okay. All right.
I vote against.
This is your first bill before our committee, I believe, right?
I believe so. So thank you.
You're all by yourself. You're very brave.
There's a lot of experts in the room if I need them.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Glad to hear that. Please proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. Senate file 1155 deals with the school boundary annexation law, which was enacted back in 1959. Under current law, homeowners seeking annexation must get approval from both the school district they are leaving and the school district they want to join. Once that approval has been granted, homeowners can then file a petition with the county, which ultimately makes a decision. For a variety of reasons, there have been recent attempts to change this law, and this is just some of the background that we collected for the recent past. Former Representative Mark Buchson from Jordan authored House File 253 in 2007. The bill would have allowed a school district on its own motion or upon petition signed by at least 50 voters in the district or 10% of the votes casted in the most recent school board general election, whichever is larger, to place on the ballot a question to split off from a school district. The bill was never heard in the House E-12 Education Committee, but the amendment has been offered four times and defeated overwhelmingly on the House floor each time in 2007, 2008, 2009, and 2010. Representative Joyce Pepin from Rogers offered it as a House file amendment on April 18, 2007, and it was defeated 35-97. In 2008, Representative Pepin offered it at the House floor, and it was defeated at a 39-94 vote. In 2009, Representative Buchson again offered it as a House floor amendment, and it was defeated on a voice vote. And most recently, in 2010, the same amendment was also offered and was defeated on a 32-100 vote. In 2012, Representative Keith Downey from Edina and Senator Jeff Michelle, also from Edina, introduced similar legislation to tackle this section of the law. Under their bill, neighborhoods that want to change districts would only need approval from the annexing district. The House Education Finance Committee approved the bill and sent it to the House floor, and the bill passed the House 73-57, but it was not heard on the Senate floor. I bring this bill to you today to establish a task force to continue to have this important conversation. As lawmakers, it is our job to ensure that our existing laws not only work to achieve the desired goals, but are also keeping up with the trends and changes of our ever-evolving society. I'm asking this committee to allow for a frank conversation with the appropriate stakeholders of whether or not this law is still achieving its desired goals, while also providing for due process for the constituents we represent. Sooner or later, one of us will be dealing with this issue in our districts, and I hear that some of you already have. And it's our duty as lawmakers to ensure that our state laws provide our constituents with a fair process to petition their government for change. I believe this bill will give us all peace of mind that the current annexation law is still relevant, or if there are any recommendations for improvement. This bill does not guarantee an outcome, but it ensures that we have done our due diligence, and for that I ask for your support and stand for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Franson. Any questions from members? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Franson, is this, if I remember correctly, Representative Downey's bill was more specific to a situation with the Hopkins School District and Edina School District, and is that the same issue that we're talking about? I know this is not getting at that specifically, but...
Madam Chair and Madam Senator Peterson, that is one occurrence in a very recent past and actually currently still an issue in my district, and we've heard of similar stories. I've talked to a few members in our committee that have experienced similar requests in their districts as well.
Thank you. Senator Chamberlain.
Yes, Madam Chair. Senator Franson, I wonder if we might be able to do two things at once. In that vein, I have the A1 amendment.
Members, do we have the A1 amendment? Just one moment, Senator. It'll get to you. If the staff could send it to Senator Franson first.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator, if you could go ahead and explain your amendment.
Thank you. This goes to Senator Franson's point about last year this bill was passed in the House but didn't get to the Senate floor. It addresses Senator Peterson, follows up on Senator Peterson's point. And what we do here, it looks a little unconventional, but you could still form a task force, which, you know, I'm allergic to task forces and committees. I'm starting to develop a psychosis. But this brings that piece back, and I would think we would like to take another shot at that on the Senate floor. It got through the House, so you can still form your task force committee if you so desire, but this would add on there also this other piece that says, you know, you can go ahead and get this done and solve your problems. It's similar, I believe it's the same language as we had last year that got through the House. So that's all I'm offering here.
Senator, so one of the issues I think that Senator Franson was trying to get at is whether or not the decision on independent districts should be made here, and, you know, how often do we entertain those questions. So I think her attempt is to say, as policymakers, we should talk about all issues, figure out if the actual policy that is in place actually works or doesn't work. Would this amendment actually provide for a decision that will be applied at the local level coming from here?
It the decision would not have to come back up to what this does is give the local authorities that it threads the needle and gives those local authorities the ability to get that annexation done without coming back to this to the legislature. This does that. So you can still form a task force and a committee if you'd like, but and people could study it and still offer the recommendations. But at the same time, this would also say these districts that have these problems go ahead with their resolution if they can get it done. Is that
Senator, I let me ask the staff, because I think this is the opposite. I don't know if I'm reading this incorrectly.
Well, Madam Chair,
it says it's not.
If I may, it looks
Senator
very.
Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It looks very close to the language, if not identical, to a bill that I introduced earlier. But after receiving a ton of inquiries from people on both sides of the issue, I thought this issue is beyond my district. It's a state issue. It's a state law. And I thought before making a decision or a course of action that would benefit one district as opposed to the other, I think it's a bigger issue that merits a more thorough discussion. And that's why I decided to opt for a task force. And that's what I'm presenting today. So I rather hold off and do not support this amendment because I think we need the stakeholders to actually have a longer conversation than just a one-size-fits-all for the rest of the state.
Senator Chamberlain?
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Franson. I understand that we all like to have conversations and talk, but as you noted in your terrific introduction there, that this conversation has been going on now for several years and a couple sessions probably. So my thought is that we've had the conversation for a couple of years. We've been going through this process for quite a while. I got off the Senate House floor last year. We're almost there. And this doesn't prohibit further conversations, but it certainly gives these folks in your district and other districts that ability to make those decisions and move ahead because they've been waiting to get this done for quite some time. And it's caused some inconvenience and heartburn for quite a few folks. So that's just a thought, and I understand where you're coming from.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Chamberlain.
Senator Clausen, on the amendment?
Yes, on the amendment. You know, the local school districts back in 1959 usually went around to farms and asked, where's your fence line and what school district do you want to be in? And since that time, we've had suburban development. We've had freeways that have run through. And in our district area, it's generally where freeways have been developed that kind of isolate certain neighborhoods. And I'm a little bit concerned about numbers 3 and 4 because we have, in our school district, residents of Apple Valley who go to the Burnsville district because a freeway divided the community. And I'm just a little hesitant about this, the wording in numbers 3 and 4, and I'd be more supportive of Senator Franzen's proposal this time.
Any other comments, Senator Peterson?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Franzen, I'm going to support the amendment just for the simple fact that I cannot imagine the horror of being in a Dinah student that has to go to the Hopkins School District.
Senator Franzen, feel free to invite Senator Peterson to your meetings. Senators, on the A1 amendment, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
Amendment is not adopted. Senator Franzen.
Well, I don't know if there's any further testimony from the public, but if not, I'd like to move my bill to be Senate File 1155. I think we have one testifier.
Okay. I think you have two people who wish to testify. If you could please approach the table and provide some brief testimony, we will appreciate it. Please proceed, Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. As with Senator Chamberlain shared with you last year, this was a piece that got very close to being law in the Senate. So we spent the summer educating our members and actually took it to a vote of our representational body. We represent every school district in the state of Minnesota, and they voted this down. There was not one vote in favor of the underlying Chamberlain amendment. We really think this whole idea starts to shred away at the idea of school districts across the state. Because of the present financing of schools, the average operating referendum for a school district across the state is $1,000 per student. When you let detachment annexation to go to another district or move away on a county whim or on the accepting district, what happens if that's the Mall of America? What happens if that's the regional center? School districts have to do some pretty unpopular things from time to time. We have to change boundaries. Eden Prairie is a wonderful example of that, and those people were not very happy, and they would have detached and gone to another district could they have gotten to do that, and they could have used this process. In places where they have high operating referendums, taxpayers also might want to move going forward. And in around outstate Minnesota, where we are facing extreme challenges with declining enrollment, if, in fact, you had to make a decision as a board member to shut down a school, this would allow those people in that area to detach and go to another school district. Madam Chair and members, though I have a tremendous amount of respect for Senator Franzen, we really feel this undermines school districts to the core. And unless you want to fund us in an appropriate per-pupil amount, this kind of authority or whim of the public to move back and forth could devastate school districts around the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Ms. Kelleher. Senator.
I may respond. I understand the concerns completely. I actually live in Edina, but I'm on the Hopkins School District, so I literally living this issue. So I represent people on both sides of this issue as it pertains to my district. But again, this is more than just an Edina-Hopkins issue. This is a state issue. We've had time and time again heard from our constituents that they want to petition their government to annex or change. There is a state statute that says that they can. I'm not changing the statute. I'm asking for a review of whether our statute provides our constituents due process, whether they have a fair hearing, whether they have adequate opportunity to present their case, because it does have bigger state implications. So the fact that testifiers alleging that this would undermine school district authority, it can't be more far from the truth, because this is not making any decisions. This is just having a conversation, which I think as lawmakers we continually have conversations on really important issues for our districts, and it's a valid conversation to have, and I don't see it as undermining any local control. I think it's quite the opposite. It actually is a forum for these type of concerns to be brought up and vetted thoroughly, and maybe the statute is perfect as the way it is. And if it is, then that's the conclusion. But if we haven't reviewed something in decades, since 1959, it's our job to make sure that the laws are still working.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Oconee, if you could provide a brief testimony.
Madam Chair, members, along with what Ms. Kelleher had to say, I also wanted to point out that as testing shifts and as people get different testing that goes on in one school district, they may want to annex to a different school district. So there are multiple reasons, the local levies, all of the funding, all of the pieces, or just a disenfranchise. I would argue, I appreciate Senator Franzen, but I would argue that there is a process in place, and that there seems to be an enormous amount of power given to 7 people in a task force. And all of you understand what has happened in the past with task forces. So I think there'd be a lot to bear in here. And I would question that the process is not working. It appears to have been. It is particularly difficult. That's the reason, because of the ramifications. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Chamberlain.
One final comment. I think I'm almost hurt, Ms. Kelleher, that nobody on that group voted for this thing. But again, I agree. We developed these task force, and by the way, deliberative conversation and questions. I'll make note of that point today. Deliberative conversations about issues. That's very important. I agree with that 100%. So, but again, we're creating another task force. As a quick side, I sat on the LGA task force, probably the 50th LGA task force since its inception, and we came to the same conclusion, and nothing will happen. And that's typically why I'm developing a phobia and an allergy to task force, is they usually don't come up with – we spend money and time and usually don't come up with any answers or solutions that most people will – they're like, forgive me if anybody's a consultant here. It's like hiring consultants. Quite often you don't get your money's worth out of it. But anyway, that's all I have to say, and thank you.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. And I do agree, Senator Franzen, that I know you've done a lot of work, have had to spend a lot of hours into this, but I believe that we have about 7 task forces that are being assigned to the department. I do feel like I have to bring a bill, and I probably will do that, Senator Wigert, to your committee, because I do not believe that these task forces should go on without appropriation. It takes a tremendous amount of time to convene, to print reports, to make sure that all people who have a say in these issues actually attend and provide. And ultimately, the irony of all of this is that after they are done with all of this work, they come here and we partially do what they say or don't do any of the things that they recommend anyway. So I am, you know, I do appreciate all the work that you've done, and I know that you live in both districts and your obligation is to really, you know, look at not only these, as you said, but, you know, other requests that may have come to us. But I do think it's problematic to keep working on creating task forces to address issues that are challenging. And I do believe that we need to appropriate funding for the department. So I will be doing that in Senator Wigert's committee. Any other comments, members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Franson.
Madam Chair, and I do believe we would have to find a fiscal note because I understand that there might have we might have to account for staff time from Department of Education. So the intention was to go to state and local because any creation such as a task force needs to go through that committee and ultimately to Senator Wigert's. I do have the concern that we've been having this conversation for years and years, and we're going to continue to have this conversation for years and years with really no action and just piecemeal legislation. So I see it as you have an option to have a task force and comprehensively look at this issue or continue to entertain bill after bill, trying to really cut to making sure that we deal with the issue locally. So we're going to see it one way or the other. I'm pushing for this task force because I do believe that we need people on the issue that are impacted on stakeholders, and I understand where people are coming from, but we still keep kicking the can down the road, and we're going to continue to see this issue next session and the sessions to come. So this is why I think this is the best approach, so we can have an adult conversation with the stakeholders.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? If not, Senator Peterson?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to lend support to what Senator Franson just said. I think I don't like task forces in general. I'd like to get the work done in the legislature when we can. But she's 1,000% right about the issue that we're going to continue to hear bill after bill every year attempting to address community issues of this nature. And I think this is actually an attempt to hopefully actually lighten our workload as it relates to these piecemeal approaches. And so in this case, I actually think I don't know if task force is the right way to go about it, but, I mean, it's an option that I think is one of the better ones that I've seen presented in my time here. So just for what it's worth, Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Senator. So we need Senator Wicklund.
Yeah, I'd just like to say I'd also like to support Senator Franson. I think that it will come back, and I think if we added up all the time that we spend each year talking about this again and – you know, talking about a bill from last year and trying to move that forward, and we really aren't having a thoughtful discussion about what the issues are. So, you know, and trying to evaluate or weigh the issues. So I would support going forward with this at this time.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Okay, members, I think we are ready to vote. So, Senator, these will go to the state and local government because it's a creation of state government of a task force, so it has to go to that committee. Final comment, Senator Nino?
Just going to ask which committee we were sending it to, Madam Chair.
State government. It goes to state government from here. So, Senator Franson renews her motion that move Senate File 1155 and to be recommended to pass and be re-referred to state and local government. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no.
No.
The bill passes. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Madam Chair.
It's kind of a curmudgeon.
Oh, it's me.
Thank you.
Senator Torres-Ray, it looks like a pretty simple bill. No testifiers.
Thank you,
please,
Senator.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Actually, this is just a cleanup. Language is a very simple bill. Apparently, there has been a misunderstanding about the request. So if we say upon request, apparently it's much more clear than the districts should actually make the request, and it's not if requested. I don't know if there has been a complaint. So it was brought to my attention that, if we clean the language to say that it is upon the district's request, then it would make it more clear. And then opportunities for coordination and cooperation. Apparently, also there is an issue, and the better language will be to coordinate and cooperate with other districts, and not just to say for cooperation and coordination, and then assess the same issue. So this is a simple bill that simply attempts to say what it was supposed to be said in the first place. So, members, I don't have testifiers because I think people felt like this was pure language clarification, grammatical language, and I agreed to do it myself.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Torres-Ray?
I have no amendments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Seeing none, go ahead and make the motion, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. I move that Senate File 945 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Dahl, I guess you have something more significant for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
Senate File 1224.
That's right. Well, Madam Chair and members, as you know, this is a little bit of a rehash from a bill that I had brought up before, which my understanding that's been laid over for possible inclusion into the Education Policy Omnibus Bill. But, there is another bill moving around in the House, and it does maybe give a little more some time to look at the issue of whether the Minnesota Teacher Licensing Exam should include the basic skills component of the bill. So I had an editorial in the Star Tribune this morning that laid out the case that I'd laid out before, that we believe that the Minnesota Teacher Licensure Exam is not working. This was from the Minnesota Department of Education. If I could just share with you, in 2012-13, schools terminated 300-plus teachers and in some cases replaced them with less qualified individuals on a temporary, limited, or substitute licenses. 27% of all Minnesota school districts reported that teacher testing requirements were a large barrier to hiring effective teachers, and in Region 1, the northwest part of the state, 52% reported the same. Between 2010 and 2011, candidates completing Minnesota programs dropped 13%, and this is teacher licensure programs, from 4,300 to 3,700. Finally, before my testifiers come, and I hope they're here, they are, I want to just share a little email I found in my inbox this morning regarding my editorial, the Star Tribune. I'll save the names. I read your editorial article in the Star Tribune this morning and I all but cheered. As a high school principal, I have hired new teachers out of college for over 20 years. Since the MTLE began, this is the first time I've needed to work with new teachers needing to get variances to teach because of the difficulty in passing the content test for MTLE. Spanish is a very difficult test and the math test is extremely difficult. One example I will use is my own son. He has a 3.95 GPA in high school, taking AP courses that included AP calculus, in which he received straight A's. He went on to Concordia College in Moorhead, where he played football, majored in math. As I helped him get ready for job searches, I was able to read his recommendations from student teaching in various schools. His supervisors rated him from excellent to outstanding in his performance. He graduated with a 3.2 in May of 2012. He interviewed three schools, all of which offered him jobs. Another school called him to offer him a position even though he hadn't applied. He chose to teach seventh grade math at this particular school. Now the downside. All of his pedagogy exams with the MTLE, but he has not been able to pass the math content subtests. The test costs $35 per subtest, $70 per session. Practice tests cost $30 each. All the money goes to Pearson Education. His son has spent close to $600 for testing sessions and practice tests and trying to pass and get a teaching license. My son has inherited some of my OCD tendencies, very focused on details. When he tests, he needs to look at every detail, often fixated on solving problems before moving on to the next one. He can do math well, but not in 48 problems in an hour. He does know how to solve math problems, and he thinks mathematically, but this test doesn't offer that to him. As a high school principal, I hired two math teachers last year. I received four applications. One applicant we reviewed was previously rejected. One promising candidate just graduated, took another job before we could interview him. We interviewed other candidates. Neither were outstanding. I had an unexpected resignation this last July. We advertised for a math teacher. We received zero applications in 3 weeks. I re-advertised in August. One applicant applied. We hired her. Finally, I cannot keep discouraging excellent teachers from the profession because of poorly designed professional testing requirements. I agree we need teachers with strong content knowledge, but let's use good educational practices to find out if we have acceptable knowledge in the subject. My son is now very discouraged. He loves teaching math, but he said to me, I may not like a better job than teaching, but if I go into some other field, at least I'll make 2 to 3 times more money. So what the bill does, and I would like to offer the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Go ahead and present the A1 amendment.
And this is just a suggestion, as you can see there, that if we look at the bill, and I'll go over the bill and I'll tell you what the amendment actually does. It does eliminate the MTLEs for basic for the basic skills in September of 14th. Until then, the board may issue a temporary one-year teaching license to qualified candidates who has not passed the skills test. And then what the amendment does is 1.22 down here does say that instead of districts must provide, it does say provide rather than must make available upon request any remedial assistant that the teacher might need to work on those basic skills portions. So it's just changing that requirement from must to may, and again at the teacher's request. On the next page of the So with that amendment, maybe we'll approve that first, and I'll go to the rest of the bill.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions on the A1 amendment? If not, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 2 of the bill, it does then go on requirements during the one-year waiver. A person who's completed an approved prep may obtain a temporary one-year teaching license. If the licensee provides evidence that they're doing remedial work, attempts to pass the skills test during the one-year licensure period, and the school district actually wants to continue hiring or licensing that person in the classroom. Finally, on page 4, the bottom of page 4 does say that there is a task force. Well, Madam Chair, to Senator Chamberlain's concern, I don't really like task force either. But, again, if, as the previous testimony has shown in the other bill that I did, that there is possible cultural bias, that we don't believe that there's good diagnostic return in terms of what the test is showing, where they're failing, et cetera, there's a whole list of things that the task force would take up. Within this year, we want to look at our MTLE requirements and basic skills. Maybe they'll come back with a recommendation that we should keep them, or maybe there's some other things that we could do to show that teachers indeed have proficiency in the basic skills through a basic skills portfolio, accredited college coursework, other methods of demonstrating basic skills mastery, alternative licensure pathway for non-English speakers, etc. So, Madam Chair, again, basically we are still eliminating it in September of 2014, but within that time frame, we will have some work on looking at, again, what is the best way to show that our teachers entering the field are indeed proficient in the basic skills. I have with me two testifiers, Cindy Criss, a legislative liaison with the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education, and a student who she'll introduce herself, in a moment. Would you like to start?
Sure.
Yes. Mr. Criss, welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Criss. I'm legislative liaison for MACD, the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. I'm here today with one of our students from Minnesota State University Moorhead, Kayla Vandenhoevel, who is becoming quite the expert at legislative matters. She was part of a group of 26 students from public and private colleges in Minnesota and about a dozen and a half faculty who spent the day up here last Thursday for MACD's Day at the Capitol. She came back Friday morning. She's on her spring break this week, by the way. So this is how she's using her spring break to be a good citizen and part of the process. Testified with me before the House committee that heard the companion bill to the bill before you today, and now she's back here today to tell her story. So what I would like to do is give you just a few little snapshots from other students who were here last week, let Kayla tell her story, and then finish up with a few specific comments from MACD about the bill. So these are all students who were here last week, and this just gives you, I think, a sense of the array of issues. One was Danielle. Danielle suffers from test anxiety. And that's really exacerbated in taking a timed test, which all of these tests are. And by the way, they're not timed for any educational purpose. It's really just a matter of efficiency to get students in and out of testing centers. Her university allows her accommodations for that test anxiety by giving her extra time to complete tests. And when she has that extra time, she performs very well. But she's had trouble with the metal basic skills test. Brianna has math dyslexia. She's passed all the other tests with flying colors, but she can't pass the math portion of the basic skills test. And she says for her, doing math problems is kind of like being an ELL student who has problems with the language. Alexander is a student who has aphasia. So he has not been able to pass the writing test. He ordinarily is able to use a technology called Dragon Naturally Speaking, which helps him accommodate that. He's not allowed to use it for the test because he has not had a diagnosis within the last 5 years, and so his disability is not recognized for purposes of accommodation. And Renee is a native German speaker who's passed all but the reading test. And his problems there have to do with culturally connected language. So he's a very good reader. He's passed the practice tests, but he can't pass the reading tests. Finally, there's Liz, who has dyslexia. Her diagnosis is more than 5 years old, so Pearson will not accept it for accommodations. She's learned that the cost of getting a new diagnosis can cost $800 or more, and it's not generally covered by insurance. So that $800 to $1,000 is an additional cost for some students on top of the cost of the test. So now Kayla can tell you in a little more detail her story and how she looked at the test. And then, as I said, I'd like to finish up with a few very brief comments about the bill itself.
Thank you. Ms. Vandenhoevel, if you could please proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kayla Vandenhoevel, and I am a junior at Minnesota State University of Moorhead. My high school experience consisted of a year and a half of college. By the time I graduated, I had 42 college credits, and I graduated with honors. And to keep up the momentum to be a very dedicated student, I transferred to Minnesota State University in Moorhead. And just my first semester, I took a credit load of 18 credits, and I earned a GPA of 3.94. And I've built up these very high credentials for myself, and I'm very proud of the credentials that I've built. But I still feel like the biggest failure because I cannot pass what is called a basic skills test. I have been very fortunate to have passed the writing and the math, and I'm not certain how I passed the math, but it shocks me that I'm still struggling with the reading time and time again, because reading has been a strong point for me in the past. And I never imagined that 48 multiple choice questions and 1 hour of time would be standing between me and the rest of my life. This is what I want to do, and this is what I desire to be. And I'm just concerned that the test is not an adequate and fair measure of all the elements that it requires to be a teacher. In order to be a teacher, you need to be able to create positive relationships with your faculty members, your students, and their parents. You need to have very good classroom management, and you need to understand how to problem solve and have very good analytical skills. And not only do you need to have those skills, but you need to know how to utilize them very quickly, because any day in the classroom is very different than the next. We are trained and we experience a four-year, very rigorous program where our professors demand greatness from us, and they are certainly not easy on us. And they give us plenty of time on campus reading and looking at studies, but they also provide practicums where we go into the field and we work hands-on with these children. And by the time we're done with our four-year rigorous program, we are more than qualified to teach and provide education for students. After our student teaching, we take the TPA, which I feel to be a very adequate measure of the whole teacher. It measures all of our abilities. It causes us to assess and reflect, grow, and demonstrate all of those skills that we have worked 4 years in this program to earn. I know that I can be an amazing teacher for your children and your grandchildren if I'm given the opportunity. And so I encourage you to consider the possibility that the MTLE basic skills is a flawed assessment and that is not accurately assessing my skills to be an effective teacher as well as my peers.
Thank you, Ms. Vandenhoevel. Ms. Chris, do you want to provide?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just a couple of additional comments. And I do have a one-page issue paper that MACTI put together that hits on some key elements about metal tests, which I won't speak to, but we're providing for your information. I just wanted to make two comments about the bill itself. I had three when I spoke in the House last week, but one of them has already been addressed by the A1 amendment, which you passed, and that was some questions about the language regarding providing remedial help. So there's just two other issues I'd like to very briefly raise. One is that we're not quite certain, as we read the bill, what happens to those who start teaching, if this passes, would start teaching with a temporary one-year license once September 1st, 2014 arrives. We assume that once the requirement to pass the basic skills test goes away, those students would then be eligible to apply for a regular ongoing license. In other words, that they'd, in a sense, be grandfathered in. But our members would be grateful to have a confirmation of that. And it may be something that staff can simply affirm that, yes, that's what the language says. The other thing is that we have a few questions about some of the specifics in the task force charge. In particular, well, there are two. One is that there's some uncertainty on our part about some of the specifics in the criteria that are described on lines 5.5 to 5.25. I'll just give you one example. The first criteria speaks to the assessment content being relevant to the teacher's subject area licensure. That seems to us to actually speak to a broader test. For example, if I'm preparing to be a social studies teacher, the basic skills test does not have social studies content. So we think some of the charge may really speak to issues broader than the basic skills test, which is not a problem for us. It just raised some questions for us within the scope of a task force focused on basic skills. We think it would be important that among the task force members, there be one or two members who have specific expertise in alternative assessments. That could either be something that would be asked for from the members appointed by the Board of Teaching, the Commissioner, or the three post-secondary institutions, or it could be an additional member or two to be appointed. And then you probably won't be surprised, given the 25, 26 students who spent a day up here last week, they would love to see some pre-service student members of the task force, either as full members or as ex officio members, so that they can share their own experiences and expertise during those deliberations. So those are a few comments about the bill. MACD and its 31 member institutions are very grateful to Senator Dahl for the work he's done on this and supportive of Senate File 1224.
Thank you. Senator Dahl.
And I assume, Madam Chair, Ms. Butler, that it is indeed after 2014 that they would not have that requirement anymore, and they would have to go through regular, you know, in terms of what is required of licensure with continuing ed credits, et cetera, beyond. So can that be confirmed, Ms. Butler?
Madam Chair, and Senator, yes.
Okay.
It cuts off at September 1, 2014.
And I don't know if you have any other questions or if anybody else wants to testify, but I'll just finish with this. You know, think about your favorite teacher that you had growing up. Think about all those teachers that influenced your life. And ultimately, did it really boil down to how good they were in math, reading, and science? Now, in terms of their content knowledge of those courses, wasn't it really about some of the things that the student here talked about in terms of their ability to motivate, to instill a desire to learn? I think I think we're missing out on a large number of the population that really want to be great teachers with this little hurdle. I also think about your ability as legislators, politicians, and I doubt when you door knocked this past summer I bet you they have this great knowledge of probably not even politics, but you know, those basic skills in your ability to reach out, to motivate, to inspire, to get things done. So I think the task force that we put in play, we still want to address some of the concerns of eliminating the basic skills altogether. And I think that with some of the examples that were mentioned, whether it's portfolio, whether it's some other assessment that actually is proven to work, I think we can still meet those minimum requirements. So I'll stand for questions or hear other testimony.
Thank you, Senator. And I know that, again, you put a lot of time into this. I was very clear on the proposal that you brought originally to our committee and how strong you feel about that. So I really appreciate that you were willing to take these back and have conversations with multiple people, and I certainly appreciate that because I know you have spent a lot of time doing that, so it makes our work a lot easier, and I certainly appreciate that you spent all of this time trying to listen and figure out what is the best approach. I have two more people who wish to testify. Senator Jim Bartholomew wants to testify, and Karen Ballmer. So I would like to ask them to approach the table.
Hello, Madam Chair, members. Please. My name's Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to testify in support of Senator Dahl's legislation. So,
that was not the case before, so I know this is good. Thank you, Mr.
After last night, yeah. We'd like to ask that rather than passing Senate File 1224 in its current version and repealing the requirement that new teachers pass a basic skills test in reading, writing, and math, we'd encourage you to examine why certain candidates aren't passing the exams and then making the appropriate changes. This seems to be a chance for us to make a data-driven decision here rather than see a problem, dump something. We believe that exams that meet or exceed industry standards that are psychometrically sound provide a valuable, objective measure of performance. It's also important to remember, and perhaps Ms. Ballmer will discuss this, the process that the medal went through to be developed, and that the exams were largely created with Minnesota teachers and higher ed faculty, and in fact that the passing scores on the medal basic skills exams were recommended by Minnesota teachers. One alternative to the repeal would be to ask the Board of Teaching, in conjunction with the teacher prep programs, to one, identify those candidates who are not able to pass the exams, two, look back at their college entrance exams, their ACT scores or something along those lines, and try to match up their scores with the areas that they're having difficulty with. If math is the problem, what was their corresponding entrance exam in math? Did they come with a hole in their background? And then third, look at the courses that they took while they were in the college prep program. Again, using math as an example, did they come into the college prep program with a hole in their background? And whether or not they took a course during the whole 4 years that they were there? Was the last math course they took basically as a junior in high school, and then they're having problems at the end of a college career taking a basic skills test in math? We aren't taking the time to see if that's one of the issues. The board should also have the test vendor provide specific answers to the concerns raised about their exams. For instance, what measures have they taken to protect against cultural bias? What accommodations are made for people with disabilities? What are they doing to provide appropriate feedback to candidates who've taken the exams? We've heard a lot of criticisms about the test and the developer, but we have yet to hear from them. It would make sense, I think, to get their detailed response. In addition, we think it's appropriate to accommodate the needs of immersion teachers who are teaching in Minnesota on a short-term basis, and based on the responses you get from the vendor and the board study, other accommodations as needed. But at this point, we'd ask you, if there are problems with the exams, let's take the opportunity to find out what they are and correct them. Minnesota should not be one of only 9 states in the country that doesn't expect new teachers to be able to pass a basic skills exam in reading, writing, and math. Thank you very much, and we appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Ms. Palmer.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Karen Balmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I wanted to offer, of course, an opportunity to answer any questions that you might have about the MTLE and specific the basic skills within the MTLE testing program, and that's my opening comment. But beyond that, I wanted to just make sure that committee members know that the concerns and the types of issues that you are now wrestling with have also been wrestled with and of concern to board members. And I come to you on behalf of those board members. And we, in fact, did identify a number of things as a result of the legislation that was enacted last year that would provide what I might call short-term remedies around some targeted areas. And specifically, we had identified things like how we might support our non-native English speakers by allowing them some additional time to take and pass this test to meet this requirement. We had also identified, for example, and is reflected in Senator Dahl's bill, a provision specific to teachers who hold licenses from outside of Minnesota and come to Minnesota to allow them for some additional time. We had also proposed thinking about what we called an alternative, something like perhaps state-approved coursework that might align with the types of competencies that are covered on the basic skills tests. And I see the flavors of that in what Senator Dahl is proposing as part of the task force work. So I wanted to offer that, lest there be any assumption that the Board of Teaching has not been interested nor concerned about these issues. We certainly have, and they have been at work around these things. Now, Senator Dahl's bill takes it one step further from, we had really focused on the short-term, sort of some targeted areas of identified need and where we thought we might put some options on the table. And this bill pushes it one step forward to the longer term. And I think that the idea of moving towards a long-term view of the entire universe of tests, and not just tests, but I would include assessments, things like what you heard from an earlier testifier, Ms. Vandenhoeven, that the EdTPA, a teacher performance assessment, we're at a different time now than we were when these tests were first adopted and required. It's been a longstanding requirement in Minnesota, and I think it's a great opportunity to pull back and to look at this entire landscape of what we're requiring for teachers to become licensed in Minnesota. So as I understand, I believe the intent of that task force, I think that these are the kinds of things that the board is very interested in. I would offer a couple of questions, and particularly in light of the clarification that was just provided earlier here with the question that Ms. Christ raised around the September 1, 2014, and it sounds like that is a hard drop-off date. And as I'm thinking from a pretty operational and practical standpoint, we are very happy to do work around the analysis, the types of things that Mr. Bartholomew was talking about, and the types of things that the task force that would be calling for. And those, as proposed, would be due to the legislature February 1. My not knowing whether that would be taken up immediately or would be folded into a larger omnibus bill, for example, my question would be whether, let's say, it was part of an omnibus bill that was adopted in maybe even late April, May, let's call it, whether that, for implementation of recommendations between that time frame and September 1 would be sufficient. So I've got questions from an operational standpoint, whether a sunset would be how that would work. And perhaps we could bring recommendations back with the intent of action, but perhaps not have that drop-off date. I offer that just as consideration for you, but I think I'll stop there. And I know you have other testimonies, but would be certainly happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Ms. Ballmer. A couple of things. One, that, you know, this is year 14, so it's so that is next year, year 14, so our concerns are correct. You know, part of, I think, what we need to do is have a good conversation. I feel that we have a tremendous opportunity to have ongoing conversations with you that, in my view, are not happening. You have a lot of information. You have access to a lot of information that we need to know about. And I think that the board needs to be a little bit more proactive in terms of coming to us and bringing these concerns to us so that we can begin to really think about, you know, how can your concerns be addressed? How can we begin to formulate language? How can we begin to have meetings? I don't know if that happens during the interim, but I really want to encourage you to do that because it is very difficult to come and address issues at the last minute, knowing that you have this information actually in advance, that you kind of know what's going on, you know, some of the problems that are taking place, some of the issues that, you know, in terms of shortage and, you know, specific teachers, you already know about that. So it would be of tremendous help if we could engage in conversations ahead of time so we can begin to formulate, you know, some specific changes, some specific recommendations. So I would really like to encourage you to have the board have a more proactive engagement with us. I think that would be of tremendous help. Mr. Org, I think you are approaching, presume you wish to say something.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Christopher Orr, and I'm the Government Relations and Policy Manager for MNCAN. First, I'd like to thank Senator Dahl for his commitment to this important issue and his willingness to hear concerns. We spoke about the issue related to the A1 amendment, and thank him for offering that. We are actually in strong support of the part of the bill that creates the working group and also creates the exemptions in the short term while that working group evaluates whether or not an exam or some type of assessment is appropriate. We are concerned, I think, as you've heard from others here, with the sunset that's in the bill, and primarily just, are we preempting the work of that task force? What recommendations will they bring back, and what moving forward before we say that this requirement shouldn't stand? So,
Thank you, Mr. Orr. Senator Clausen, you had a question.
Ms. Vollmer, could she come back up, please?
Ms. Vollmer, you could.
Am I pronouncing that correctly? Was it Ms.?
I believe so. Don't ask me about pronunciation. So.
I think you had trouble with mine. Ms. Vollmer, do you have any statistical information about the percentage of prospective teachers that pass or do not pass the math, do not pass the reading? In other words, can you give us a breakdown statistically on passing rates, failure rates?
Ms. Palmer, if you could help us with that.
Madam Chair, Senator Clausen, yes. In fact, there was a presentation I had provided in the House and I'd be happy to share the same information with you, absolutely. The data that I'll give you is best attempt, and it is in total. So since we began the MTLE testing program in September of 2010 on the basic skills mathematics, we have an overall pass rate of 76%. Basic skills reading, 77%. Basic skills writing, 77%. Again, that is overall aggregated data and best attempt. So if I'm a candidate that took it, let's call it the basic skills reading, and I passed it on the first try, that's in the data, as well as if I took that test three times and have yet to pass. It's the best attempt data.
Senator, I don't know if Senator Clausen, do you have a follow-up, or is that enough?
Well, I just wanted to know the rates, Madam
okay,
Chair.
Thank you. Senator Chamberlain.
I'll follow up with that. Well, that's interesting. You know, when I'm no testing expert, but I know back in the day, you can grade on curves, and we all are familiar with bell curves and normalization and statistics and law of large numbers. Is this outside the norm? How many do we, in other words, would we expect 100% or 98% or 97% of the teachers who take the test to pass? And if that is in fact the case, is there not something wrong with the test? Now, from what I know from talking to some smart professors and teachers is that if you got a test where almost everybody's passing with a B or A, well, then you're talking about a test that's not really testing. So you look for that norm, that statistical norm, where things are kind of where they should be. So, would we expect 100% or 98% of the teachers who take this test to pass, or out of a large group of teachers, is this what we would realistically expect? And is it realistic to expect that 98 or 90% would pass? And if we did get 98 or 90% to pass, would that be good for everybody? I think that makes sense. You're in the testing business, so I think you understand that.
Ms. Palmer?
Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, I guess I'm not in the testing business in the sense I don't have that psychometric background, but I can offer a couple of thoughts that might provide some context. There are different schools of thought on data such as this, one that you would want to see and expect to see everybody passing, that a very high passage rate is maybe doing its job in the sense that we're getting everybody over that hoop or that hurdle, and we're getting everybody there at some point. Another school of thought might be that actually this is a measure that would discriminate in some way and would not have that intended purpose of getting everybody over that. They're just sort of different assumptions as a starting point for how you might then interpret the data, whether it's good, bad, or otherwise. I would offer, though, that as some historical context, prior to this testing program, the MTLE, we actually had a different testing program. It was called Praxis. It's a nationally available testing program, and we did enjoy higher pass rates on those tests. And so when we made a change to the MTLE, we have experienced a change, and specifically a decreased performance rate, as in what I just shared with you. What we now know about the former tests is when the board made this change in 2009, in development heading into 2010, we didn't have a way of knowing what that praxis sort of threshold or the difficulty level was until we had the Common Core academic standards. Then at that point, the NEA and ETS, the testing company, actually put together a really nice study where they have an alignment, and they were finally able to see, well, gosh, what is that threshold of for that Praxis series that we used to have? And what they learned was that the mathematics was about a 10th grade mathematics level, and then the reading and writing were high school graduation. And so we can see in the change that took place, there's a difference in the test, and then subsequently there's a difference in the performance. So I hope that maybe it's just some context to put around your thoughts and questions, Senator Chamberlain.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Chamberlain.
Well, you certainly sound like a testing person to me. But clarify something for me. Two things. Praxis had a higher pass rate. I mean, again, if everybody's passing a test, is that what we expect? The other thing is that this is where I need clarification. You said 10th grade and 12th grade reading and writing. Well, is that what we were testing teachers at with Praxis?
Ms. Bonner.
Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, and I'll be happy to provide the report to you. That was what their findings, that was their findings, that for the Praxis, which was what we had previously adopted as our teacher licensure examinations for basic skills.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
That was what they had found from that crosswalk.
Madam Chair, just follow up. I'm not trying to belabor a point, but I just want to make sure I understand what I'm hearing. So the Praxis exam for basic teacher licensing tested teachers at the 10th grade math and at the 12th grade reading and writing. Is that correct?
Ms. Bonner.
Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, as long as I'm reading that accurately, that is what I understand their findings to be.
One last follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr.
Senator
Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with the MTLE, what do we presume we're testing them at?
Ms. Bowman.
Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, the Board of Teaching, and this is an important piece of the history, in the development process, they were asked by the test developers, where do you want us to set that expectation for incoming teachers these tests? And so the discussion was, well, they could be college high school graduation level tests, they could be college ready tests, or college experienced. Now, we don't have academic standards in college. There's no such thing as sophomore level standards or freshman standards or seniors. But the direction that they provided was that these tests would be set at a threshold of college experience. And the way they fleshed that out was that that they would recognize the skills and competencies relating to for reading college level texts. Again, there's no such thing as a freshman text or a senior text, but reading college level text, that they would be writing in a manner consistent with college-level expectations, and for mathematics, that they would be performing mathematics functions expected of a candidate involved in a liberal arts education.
I think that was good.
That's all for now, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Dahl.
And Madam Chair, we would expect that, Senator Chamberlain, that we should all be able to pass a 10th grade math test. However, again, as my first testifier said, we are trying to determine some basic skills knowledge in a 1-hour time frame with students with learning disabilities, which she named at least 5 or 6 of them. And I think that's one of the flaws. And of course, the opening email that I read, here we have a math major and had a 3.9 in college and a 3.2 in college. A math major can't pass one of the subset tests in math. I think there's a problem with the math test. Wanted to add one more brief comment, if she could.
If you could.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, I think, who asked the question. I also am not a psychometrician, but I wanted to give you a little bit of information about these test scores, because they provide what's called a scaled score, which is a conversion of the raw score into a score in a predetermined range for each test. So if you got, 60% of the items correct on the test, that's not, if you got a 60%, if you fell in the 60% range, that's not the same thing as getting 60% of spelling items correct. So in other words, this is not simply a measure of an individual's performance, but it's a measure of their performance relative to other students, other expected ranges. So it's a more, I don't know if that's very clear to you. I was trying to find the clearest language for myself as well as the committee on this, but just to help you understand that the score and therefore 76 or 73% passing is not the same thing as 73% passing a spelling test. The other thing that I would say is that Mr. Bartholomew made a reference to how these tests were constructed and the cut scores were set. The groups of faculty and teachers who worked on this worked very hard to have a good result, but they were also basically making their best guess of what items would test what we want to test and how they thought students would perform. And in the past, when the Board of Teaching would set those cut scores, they would hold students harmless on their performance until at least 100 students in Minnesota had taken the test and the Board of Teaching could look at how they had performed. With this metal test, that never happened. Students were basically held to the results immediately because, you know, they sort of had to be. It was part of an ongoing process. And so, in a sense, our students have been guinea pigs while we see how well this test works. And I think a lot of us believe there's a lot of data to show that it hasn't worked very well.
Senator, do you know why did we call this the basic skills test, since this is college? You know, we have college experience level, and then we have liberal arts, which is way above the skill that is necessary for a high school student, right? So we're talking about teachers who teach high school, and they are being asked to pass. Where does the term basic came from instead of, you know, this is really above basic. Do you know why do we call that basic? Because it's a term. Well, I'm just curious about how we label things, because we give the public the understanding that this is very basic. And honestly, you know, I've been reading this, and it's just really not basic at all. So, Ms. Ballmer, where does the term basic came from? Was it just entirely our idea?
Madam Chair, I don't know. We've been testing since I was in school with the Iowa Basic Skills Test, and that's what I remember. But, again, when we think of, in real simple terms, reading, writing, and arithmetic, right, you know, those are our basics, and I think that might be a term that has kind of stuck for the last 40 years.
I think we need to change that, Senator, because it really gives the public the impression that we're measuring basic skills on teachers, and there's nothing basic about this. And so this is
and again, Madam Chair, we're not messing with the content test and the pedagogy test. We still, a social studies teacher should know social studies, and actually a math teacher should know math.
Right.
So, and science teacher should know science. So,
thank you.
One last
thing,
if I may?
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would, you know, every in my short 50 years on this planet doing different things, there's always been accommodations made for people who had some trouble and some difficulties in areas, and that's certainly reasonable. And as we said the other day, and I won't go over all that again, Madam Chair, but this really is throwing out the whole thing. And to resolve your basic skills question, we will solve that, because we are repealing the basic skills exams here for teachers. And I would sincerely hope, I would have hoped, I've got my finger in the dam here, I realize that, but I would have hoped that we would have been more reasonable and said, we want the best for our kids, we want the best teachers in the classroom for our kids, and those teachers are having a little bit of trouble here and there. We're going to make accommodations. We'll write some language to remediate that and help that. And my hope was that we would do that, continue to work for the best possible situation in the classroom for our kids and not throw the baby out with the bathwater, and make accommodations for those who truly need some help. But what we're doing here is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I really think These passing rates for what you had were not unreasonable, 76, 77, 77, that requiring teachers to have a basic understanding of 10th grade math and high school, well, that was Praxis, I'm sorry. But if you're just out of college or a couple years out of college, you should be able to pass a college-level reading and writing exam and the basic math, probably at a lower level. I would agree with that. But I think these are reasonable pass rates. I think that we're not asking a whole lot, and I'm just concerned that we are throwing the baby out with the bathwater and we're not doing what's best for the kids. We are looking at outcomes for teachers. We want the best for the kids. And I don't see this getting us there. I have all due sympathy and respect for those who have challenges, but this is not best for the kids. We're looking at ourselves again. We're looking about what's best for me. I need to be in that classroom. As I said the other week, I want to be a pilot. Put me in the air and put me at the controls. I don't care if I can't pass X, Y, or Z, but it's about me. This isn't about the teachers. This is about the kids in the classroom. So I know that I'm not going to win this fight, but people will know. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chamberlain. A couple of more comments, Senator Thompson, and then Senator Clausen, and then closing remarks, Senator Law. Senator Thompson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I would second the things that Senator Chamberlain has said, and the argument seems to be that because the testing mechanism isn't perfect and treats some people unfairly, and undoubtedly some people are good at testing and probably get through it that shouldn't, that therefore we need to do something dramatic. I just respectfully disagree. Obviously, we should try to make the test as highly correlated as possible with the attributes that you need to be a good teacher. My experience, of course, with standardized testing is the bar exam. I had a pretty good friend in law school that, to my knowledge, he never passed the bar exam, and he was every bit as good a student as myself. I have no idea why he couldn't pass the bar exam. That's life. Not everybody can get her done, as they say. But that doesn't mean that we should throw out the test. You know, Walter Cronkite once said that reporting good news is like reporting all the dogs that aren't lost. And unfortunately, the problem that we have in these kinds of settings when we're debating legislation is we hear the side of the folks that for whatever reason have difficulty, whereas we could, of course, by these statistics, line up at least three people that took the test and passed it for everyone that didn't. And so I too, am very disappointed that we are getting rid of this. Teachers should be, and I believe can be, and for the most part are, are professionals that are doing a professional caliber job, and obviously something we consider to be very important. But saying, well, because not everybody can pass it and there are problems with the test, we should get rid of the test. Medical doctors don't try that. They don't ask for the medical boards to be done away with. I'm unaware of any movement to get rid of the bar exam, even though it's certainly a very imperfect measure of what it takes to be a quality lawyer. And this is letting the kids down. Now, should we step back and attempt to fix this test if the test does not do a good job of measuring those skills that are required to be an effective teacher? Absolutely. Any reasonable person would agree with that. But to tell the people of Minnesota that someone doing a job as critical as teaching our students that, well, we don't like the test we have and it may exclude some people, therefore we're going to throw it out and there's not going to be a testing standard in some of these skills areas, I don't think is right. And by the way, accommodations can be made. I actually know of a legal practitioner who has a learning disability, and they accommodated that individual so that he could take the bar exam, accommodating his situation that was fair relative to the other people taking the bar exam. Again, any reasonable person agrees that should be the case. And last time you had a bill up on this topic, Senator Dahl, we had a gentleman in here, I apologize, I can't recall his name, a young guy that seemed very interested and by all measure a good teacher, had some sort of issue that prevented him from doing well on the test. Do we need to look at accommodating those things? Absolutely. But to take away a minimum testing standard for our teachers is a disservice to the students and the parents in this state. And I will vote no, and Madam Chair, request a roll call.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Clausen?
Yes. Leading to licensure in the state of Minnesota, there are other requirements other than these basic tests or college experience tests. Can you just quickly comment on that?
Thank you, Senator. I really appreciate that question. We had a meeting with some of the students that came from all over Minnesota, and I asked that question because I think it's very important that we thoroughly understand what are the other requirements that are huge. So could you please take time to describe what those requirements are, Ms. Ball?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Clausen. There are a number of requirements that comprise our teacher preparation and licensing process. Teacher candidates that enroll in a program first are enrolled in a program that has been approved by the Board of Teaching, and that means that those teacher preparation programs have demonstrated alignment to the academic standards that for teachers. So if they're going to be a business education teacher, those business education teacher licensure standards are embedded into the fabric of that preparation program and delivered through coursework, through clinical practice, student teaching, and so forth. So there are a number of program-specific requirements. Typically, it would be the coursework, the clinicals, and student teaching. Beyond that, for testing, there's a battery of three different types of tests. There's the basic skills, which is you've been debating this afternoon, consisting of reading, writing, and mathematics. There is a general pedagogical test, and so the test of general broad teaching skills in terms of assessment and strategies and working with a diversity of learners and working in a classroom, maintaining a positive classroom environment, engaging learners, and so forth. So there's a test of those broad pedagogy standards. And then, as you've heard mentioned earlier today, there are content-specific tests. So that business education teacher is going to have an examination specific to business education. The math education teacher will have the math test and so forth. So there's three types of tests. Beyond that, we also have, and you heard in earlier testimony, something called the EdTPA. It's a teacher performance assessment built out of Stanford University, very similar for those of you who are familiar with National Board Certification, very similar architecture. That is a response to a legislative mandate that we have a content-specific performance assessment for our teacher candidates that was enacted in 2011. So there's a broad universe of assessments and tests and preparation and licensing requirements.
Okay. Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Senator Clausen.
Asking the question of committee members, in the last month, when have you used algebra as part of your Senate duties? No one here? I know in teacher preparation, unless you are going into mathematics, you will not take a math class in the college preparation teaching requirements. So your last math class was probably 11th or 12th grade of high school. But you're being tested at a college level, and that's probably 4 years away from when you took your last test. I have less problem with the reading assessment and the writing assessment. I think those are basic skills that everyone will be using, so I have a less problem with that. But I don't think right now in the law that, you know, in the proposal we're looking at, I don't see accommodations that I think Senator Chamberlain talked about. I don't think we have enough of them built into this for people that are having some difficulties. And at the same time, we're doing a lot of testing in areas very specific to the teacher licensure that's going to be granted to the student. So I think across the board, I've got problems. I don't think there's a necessarily this is a total fix. And on the other hand, I don't think what we're doing is a total fix. So I'm in a quandary, quite honestly. Thank you.
Thank you. Closing remarks.
And Madam Chair, thank you. And, of course, in addition to all the things that Ms. Ballmer mentioned about teacher preparation, of course, the college, in terms of it being admitted to the education program, is a pretty high hurdle to reach. I have the September 14th kind of drop dead date in there, but we do have the task force. And believe me, if the task force has come up with the kind of concerns that you've all brought before us, and I know that she has given me a document with some concerns that they've been addressing since its inception. I'll be the first one next February to bring a bill that says, yes, basic skills requirements can be met in this particular manner. So I think there's time. I'm going to keep the drop-dead date of September 1st, 2014, in the bill. That'll give us some pressure. We got the one-year waiver in, but let's get this fixed and make sure it's fixed right to make sure that Ms. Vandenhuisel and Dan Devine from Pillager, the art teacher, can indeed do the profession that they love.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair?
Could you, Senator Root?
As a roll call has been asked for, I would ask that the vote be recorded in the journal.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Yeah, we need two votes for that, so thanks. The clerk will take the roll. Senator, could you renew your motion? So this will be recommended to be included in the omnibus bill and re-refer to the finance. To finance. So if you could take the roll.
Senator Torres Frey.
Yes.
Senator Dahl.
Yes.
Senator Nelson. Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain.
No.
Senator Clausen.
No.
Senator Franzen.
No.
Senator Johnson.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
No.
Senator Nienau.
No.
Senator Peterson.
No.
Senator Rood.
No.
Senator Thompson.
No.
Senator Wieger.
No.
Senator Wicklund.
No. There being four yes and ten no's, bill does not pass. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
just
Senator
one comment.
Blossom.
I would really support what we have in Section 3, Teacher Licensure Advisory Task Force, that they provide a report to us so that we can further study this.
Senator, I think that you have the right to work with the author and bring a bill forward so that we can entertain that. But this bill now is closed, so you could bring that back to us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Here's the, let me see, here's the, thank you, Senator. Senators, we have now Senate File 1169, Senator Carlson.
It's in and out of committee. You know, this is the task.
And Senator, you have four people who wish to testify. So we're going to call two of them, and then we will move to the next two. And please proceed to present your bill. And call your testifiers.
I think ultimately.
Senator, Chair, please go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, I have Senate File 1169, which is an initiative of the governor to take a look at. And I'm sorry, Senator Chamberlain, I'm hoping this isn't like a bee sting. But it is to form a task force
Sorry, I almost had to leave, but thanks for the warning.
Madam Chair, I have some amendments that I'd like to put into the bill before we discuss it, because there's some minor and some a little bit more major changes to it.
So you have an amendment, Senator?
I have an amendment.
Could you tell us what the number is? I don't...
And I'm going to do them both orally.
Okay, so you have two.
Yes.
Let's move one and then go to the next.
You have A1 amendment. And
okay.
I'll tell you what, maybe what we'll do it is we'll do it with the A1 amendment by doing an oral amendment to the amendment.
Okay.
How's that?
So first, Senator, you have to move the A1 amendment, and we adopt that, and then you amend that. Okay. So, Senator Carlson...
Shall I amend the amendment first?
Amend the amendment first.
Correct. Okay, thank you.
And then adopt the amendment.
Madam Chair,
Senator, go ahead.
I would like to offer the amendment A1 with this following amendment. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to put in the including special education teachers as part of the task force, and that would be as it's specified there, page 1, line 11. And... then the I would delete the rest of that A1 amendment and put in a repeal sections 2 and 3. So we will repeal the repealer of the rules. We will keep the rules as is.
Stay just gets better and better, doesn't it?
Are there any questions on that?
Oh, just a second, Senator, so that staff actually catches those. Staff, are we clear on this, Ms. Butler?
Madam Chair, members, I understand that Senator Carlson's amendment to his amendment is on the amendment delete lines 3, 4, and 5, and then insert... page 1 of the bill, delete section 2, and then page 2, delete section 3.
Okay. Is there any question on the amendment to the amendment? If not, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Now if you could move into the amendment, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you for the support, members. This bill is crafted to address some of the aspects of the burgeoning challenges to educating the increasing number of students requiring special education. The average cost of a general education student in Minnesota is approximately $8,500. Special education requires different approaches, different staffing levels, technologies, and attentions, which lead to an average special education cost of about $22,000 per student. Every special education student is different and has an education plan to guarantee their assessment, the challenge, and the measurements with goals. The IEPs are as individual as every student, and the implementing the plans can reach $100,000 or more. Now, what the Office of Legislative Auditor has said is that in Minnesota we have costs that have gone up tremendously in the last few years, and the average from between 2000 and 2011, 56% of the revenues come from special education, and that's a special budget item. 33% come from school districts, and about 11% from federal revenues. And if everyone remembers, the Fed said that they were going to try to support this at a 40% rate, and we used to even say that they've never increased to even an 18% rate. And now it looks like the average is about 11%. Which is putting a lot of stress on our education budgets and on the so-called cross-subsidy. So there have been some efforts to reduce the paperwork, reduce some of the mandates that are in special education, and that's what this bill is all about. And what it does is it sets up a task force to look at those particular items, including the staffing levels of special education. And what we have done now, I've gotten a lot of pushback about the rules because it was a bit of a surprise to some people, and it does take out some of the incremental steps in putting together an entire plan for a student. And so what we're going to do is the advocates for special education students and the commissioner's office are going to work on the, you know, via this special education task force, and we're going to try to work out some language that may be some middle ground. To describe what we're doing and to give you a little bit more information and answer some questions, I've got Kevin McHenry here from the agency. So I'm going to ask him to...
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. First off, we'd like to thank Senator Carlson for bringing forward Senate File 1169. There has been a lot of work done to try to minimize paperwork in special education through the administration. There's been a lot of work to try to find as many reforms so teachers can spend more time in the classroom with students. We look forward to continuing working with advocates on both sides of the aisle to see this continue. A few things that we have done leading up to this provision over the last year or so is every year districts are required to report how they plan to serve children with disabilities. This is known as a total special education system report. Our director of compliance and monitoring in her division has worked closely with districts and with the advocacy community to reduce that paperwork from 276 pages to 16 pages. Further, through our Division of Compliance and Monitoring, they've reduced the cost of due process hearings by more than 53% since 2011. They've reduced the requests to a due process resolution, or from a request to a resolution, from 114 days in 2010 to 69 days currently. They've developed a best practice guide for parties and judges, which has seen a reduction in case extensions by nearly a half. In the governor's budget, there are a couple proposals that we're proceeding with. One including model IDEA paperwork, which will make sure that districts have the option of using standard paperwork that is aligned to federal standards that they can use at an optional level. Further, there's also some reform in the special education formula. The idea behind some of the reforms in there are having the funds travel to the specific disability students, depending on how their what level service they need. There's also some sharing between the providing district and the resident district, or the serving district and the resident district, to try to identify some cost saving mechanism. So in this bill, what this is going to take a look at is looking at what we can do as far as caseload and caseload reduction. What we'd like to continue doing, we're not proceeding with some of the repealers in the bill, but obviously the Office of the Legislative Auditor just released a report indicating some things that Minnesota could do to streamline special education services. Some of it is taking a look at what the federal requirements are, comparing those to state requirements, seeing where we go beyond, maybe why we go beyond, and if they're, I don't want to say not if they're necessary, but if that needs to be more of a local decision rather than a state decision. So I think we're interested in continuing that conversation to try to find a way if there are areas that that our state requirements are going beyond federal requirements, and if that is necessary to continue. One thing I will say, and I know I'll get a little pushback, but on the task forces, I appreciate Senator Chamberlain's comments on that. I can say that through the last couple sessions, there has been a significant amount of work that has been sent to the department for task force work. And you guys are all working on quite a bit of the work that's being brought forward. What we feel is really important is that what you take a broad variety of folks that are specialists in the field, that are working in schools, that are the advocates, and you get a chance to really work out some of the details and bring some suggestions and solutions forward for the legislature to consider. some of the things you've seen already. The assessment task force, you've heard that issue come up. You've heard the integration revenue issue come up. Teacher evaluation, principal evaluation. There's a bill moving forward on restraints that is a anytime I think you go into that field, you need to be very careful working with both sides to provide the safest environment. And our Division of Compliance and Monitoring did a great job of bringing those two sides together. And there's legislation moving forward this session. So I understand that there are the pushbacks on the task forces, and sometimes there are reasons to bring a task force forward to find a comprehensive solution to bring forward to the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. I might ask a question. Are some of the suggestions that you brought up today, are they in the special ed report from the legislative auditor? Is that where you basically got those ideas?
Madam Chair, members, there is a handout that was provided that just does an overview of the special or the OLA report. This was one of the recommendations. Some of the other recommendations that were included included the model paperwork, continuing to work with districts, things that we are doing. But we want to continue working and see where there are areas where we can find efficiencies.
And we want you to. Thank you. Mr. Carlson, did you wish me to call Barbara Case to testify? She is listed as a testifier.
She is listed. She's here if there are any questions that she can answer.
Senator Chamberlain.
Just a quick question. Maybe you already covered it. I apologize. I think you mentioned something about the regs that you have that you're repealing here. Did you say you were going to hold off on that repeal or talk to him about that repeal piece, Senator Carlson?
Senator Carlson, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Chamberlain, the rules... we were planning to repeal a couple of the rules, but that really wasn't it might have been a little bit fast that we were moving there. And so what we're doing is we're leaving them in.
Okay.
And we're going to work on seeing if they can be streamlined.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Barbara Case, Rennell Nelson, and Elaine Keefe listed to testify, and I see Ms. Abderholden would like to make some comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. I am glad that the repeal of the rules is gone from there. But I also actually want to challenge all of you in a different way. At least three times in my lifetime, we have done a comparison of where state rules and laws exceed federal. And we have pretty much gotten the same result each and every time. I think we're asking the wrong question. We did, in 2009, make some changes after that last task force report, and I remember sitting in a very hot room with several of us figuring out, well, could we change the transition age, and could we do this tweak and that tweak? But the reality is, you know, we have different rules in Minnesota for a reason. What we really need to do is ask a different question. The question needs to be, how can we use our dollars most effectively, most efficiently, and get the greatest outcomes for children with disabilities? If we continue to focus on where we exceed federal, it is the definition of insanity, you aren't going to get a different answer. You're asking the same question over and over and over again, and we come back and we give you the same answer over and over and over again, and we don't get anywhere. And it has boxed us in so that we can't think creatively about how to do things differently. And so I would urge you to take that recommendation, which the only reason it's in the OLA report is because you required them to look at it, toss it out. I think I would actually get a lot of agreement from people in this room who are so tired of that discussion. And think creatively about this. Ask different questions. Bring maybe some fresh blood into it. But you have to ask a different question if you want a different answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Yes, proceed.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Elaine Keefe, and I represent the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. We're a coalition of organizations working on special education issues, including the PACER Center, the Epilepsy Foundation, the Dyslexia Association, the Brain Injury Association, the Autism Society, the Minnesota Organization of Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, and the Prader-Willi Syndrome Association. And I, too, want to thank Senator Carlson and the department for agreeing to remove the repeal of those rules from the bill. And we are certainly more than willing to work with the department in looking at how we can focus on getting the best outcomes for students at the best price for the taxpayer. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Keefe. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and members, when Ms. Abderholden came up and spoke to us, I think it was kind of a little bit of an admonishment, and I think it was okay. And I'm thinking that what we would want to do is to tell this task force to look at how we can reduce costs and improve incomes for children with disabilities, for children with disabilities. But that is really what we're all trying to do, even though we're focusing on what somebody puts in front of us. It makes it kind of easy to pick out. But for myself, that's what I will be trying to think about.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that end as well, I sensed a tone of frustration, and I just want to point for the record that there's a lot of new people in the legislature. So for those advocates, we're very committed to making changes and to think differently, but we also need the education. So be patient with some of us that haven't heard the same question and the same answer for the amount of time that you have. But again, we're committed to learning and working with you. I do have a question because I know I've been getting a lot of emails and phone calls in the last few hours, actually, and I want to make sure for the record that the individual education plan, I believe that was one of the proposed repealed rules, and that's not moving forward because I did get a lot of concerns about that one in the last few hours.
Senator Carlson?
Yeah, Senator Franzen, Madam Chair, Senator Franzen, you're absolutely correct. The major issue that people had concern about was the steps, the smaller steps to get to the goals, and yes, that remains in the bill, or in law, in the rule. So yes, we have taken care of that.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Chamberlain.
One final comment. I think you're trying to do the right thing, Senator Carlson. I would hope the comments of our last testifier, or the previous one, were, I think they made a point in that you'd be willing to, see if we can ask a different question to get to solve the problem that you're trying to get at. So I don't necessarily oppose what you want to do, but surely they'll work with you to get the right question asked, and then we might find what's driving this. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Weakland.
Madam Chair, will this go to state and local then, because it's a task force? Is that the next?
Yes. Yes, Senator, it will.
Would it be possible to, Madam Chair, would it be possible to understand whether this question or this statement in here for the duties is really the best statement before we see it again in state and local? Or do you feel that this statement of what you're asking for in this report is the best one, hearing the testimony today? I guess that's a question to you, Senator Carlson.
So, Senator, are you saying that if there will be possibility of incorporating an amendment to address that in that particular committee?
Perhaps an amendment to adjust what the report is going to focus on.
Senator, my sense is that you will have to do that on the floor, because I think that the jurisdiction, probably the chair of that committee, will not allow significant change in that particular committee, because that's more substantive and is the responsibility of this committee. So you might have to work with the author to see if you could offer that when we present the omnibus bill. Thank you, Senator.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator, and Senator Wickland, if you have some wording right now, I would be open to that.
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, I guess I don't have words right now. I just felt that the testimony from the two people that came to the table seemed to indicate that, we want to be clear when we're asking a question of a task force that, we're getting some useful information. So,
Senator, this will be coming back to us in the omnibus bill. So okay. why don't the two of you work together and then bring some language to us, and then you put an amendment, because it's easier to do it here than it is to do it in the other committee.
Okay.
Senator Johnson.
Well, Madam Chair, and Senator Carlson and Senator Wickland, I didn't think of that until you mentioned it, Senator Wicklund, but, you know, if we could say the commissioner shall establish in, you know, the first paragraph, including to some way or another look at reduce how we can reduce costs, improve outcomes for children with disabilities, and include that as a direction to the task force, rather than picking out just like, you know, number of students that could be assigned or something like that. Or maybe that's too broad. I don't know. Senator Carlson.
Senator Wicklund, Senator Carlson, is that enough? Senator Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, I think what I'd like to do is I'd like to work with the advocates. And we'll get, because it is coming back here again, let me commit that we will put some additional words in there. We'll clarify the duties, because I agree with Senator Wicklund that obviously there's more to be said here. So I think we'll put together some words and we'll bring it into the omnibus bill. That won't. I don't believe that will affect it in its other committees.
So
that's something that I think we can do here.
That's right. Thank you. Any other questions, members? If you don't have any more questions, Senator Carlson moves that Senate File 1169 as amended be recommended to pass and put in the omnibus bill. It has to be referred to state and local. Sorry. So that's the motion before you. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Senator.
Members, thank you so much for helping with this process. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question on process. You mentioned the omnibus bill. Obviously, the deadline's on Friday. When do you intend to have that bill posted for us? Obviously, an omnibus bill is going to have a lot in there to take in. So
yes.
Just curious.
Yes, Senator. So have asked Ms. Butler to begin to put it together. So she's working as fast as we possibly can. I really appreciate it. She said if I wouldn't be sitting here, then I would be making progress. But the answer to your question, Senator, is that we will be presenting that tomorrow. I will post it as soon as we have that done. So what we're going to do is simply go over it, because I would like to come back on Thursday, but I want to give you ample time to review it. This is going to be everything we have heard already, but you need to see it again. My intent is to hear some bills tomorrow, to present it to you tomorrow, go over it, and then you take it with you and digest it and look and see if everything is there, and then we come back on Thursday and dedicate the entire day to that bill. So I'm doing my best to post it as soon as we can, so I hope that tomorrow, as early as I can put it all together, it will be posted.
Madam Chair, so amendments should be prepared for the Thursday hearing.
That is correct, Senator. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, everything, again, just so members, especially for the new members, everything that we have heard will be incorporated into that bill. So there is nothing new. And, you know, if you had any amendments, any ideas, just, you know, start compiling that. What you will see is basically a compilation of what we have heard. And then you can proceed to review that and see what you want to amend. And we will take ample time to review that and review your amendments. So that's what we plan to do during the next 2 days. If you have any questions for me, I really, again, want to encourage you to meet with members who have a bill that you have concerns about and you want to present an amendment. Please talk to that member. Find out if you could come to consensus on offering amendments to those particular bills. It will help us immensely with time, and also to get your things done, so that we don't have to just simply vote yes or no on ideas that have a lot of merit and that we should be just talking about it. So I encourage you to meet, talk about it. Bring it to us. Let me know if you're not able to get in touch with that member and they don't want to answer the phone. I want to answer the phone, and I do want to talk to you so that we can establish some conversations. Any more questions, members? If you have no questions, we will adjourn for today. Thank you.